Hello, everyone. My name is Ryan Griggs, and I'm the host of the Virginia Sounds podcast. And alongside me today is Kelly from The Last Small Farm. Thank you for joining me.
Absolutely.
I guess to really get started, as I was mentioning before, I just hit record. I've been following you alongside Instagram for quite some time and love everything that you've been sharing. And I noticed just reading your bio online too that you're a fifth generational farmer. And so I guess even before talking about what you're currently doing, I would love just to hear what it was like growing up in Nebraska as a, just in that world.
Yeah, absolutely. So grew up central Nebraska area, and my dad did Simmental Angus cattle, had a small beef cattle herd, and then did some crop farming with corn, soybeans, and hay. My one side, grandpa, did sheep. He did market lambs, and then the other did hogs. And then my mom brought in the goats on the side, and we always had large gardens. And I guess, I was asked the other day, like, why do you call yourself the last small farm? Well, that's how I grew up. I grew up on a small farm, even though we were still doing larger things in the today's time, it was super small. And so it was just everything, you know. My great grandpa, Glenn, farmed with my grandpa. So I remember very clearly, my great grandpa didn't pass away until I was 13. So I remember very clearly generational farming. And my dad jumped in on my mom's side to come down and farm on that land, which was interesting in and of itself to have the in-law come out to mid Nebraska there and farm. So it's just from the very beginning, it's all that I can really remember doing. My parents are still on that farm. It's funny. That's, they actually always tell me, they're like, you have a plot of land right here. You could be down here with us doing this. Why do you need to be in Alaska? So we miss our family a lot. I think Nebraska is probably the most beautiful place. Even though I live in Alaska, I love Nebraska. So that's kind of how it all started.
With that in mind then, did it feel, because I know experiences obviously vary from person to person and farm and ranch to farm and ranch. Was that something growing up that you thought in the long run that you were going to have your own farm and just something that you wanted to be doing? Or yeah, I'd be curious to hear that.
As a younger kid, I did. Really, my entire, like what I wanted to do in life as a kid was be a farmer's wife. Like I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I wanted to be in Nebraska farming alongside my husband. That was like the epitome of greatness that I could ever have. And I happened to go to, it was National 4-H Congress in high school, which my parents made me go to. I wanted to stay home to play volleyball or something. That was, you know, our small little town of 800 people. But they're like, no, you need to do this. And kind of the world opened up to me at that point. And I was like, oh my goodness, it was Atlanta, Georgia, but I was like, there's so much more out there that I want to go and see. And my parents really encouraged me, not against farming, but very much encouraged me to go and explore and see and do other things. And so that's when it kind of shifted as, oh, maybe, you know, I could do something. I never wanted to go to college. And then it was like, well, maybe I should go to, I could go to college. And really was going down the track to be a communication major, wanted to work with businesses, wanted to do training and development, not really farm at all. When I left for college, my dad got out of farming. We kind of had a unique situation. My mom had MS. And so she was his main helper until she couldn't do it anymore. And then I really became that main helper, but it was never the, you know, that I was supposed to stay home. So when I left for college, he really sold out of everything there. You know, still lived on the farm, but got more of an in-town job.
I find that interesting. I mean, especially for your generation, I know a lot of folks that grew up on farms and ranches were told to essentially move away to find better jobs that aren't less strenuous and whatnot on your body. So I'm just curious too, because you mentioned with your great grandfather, with your grandfather, Are there any stories that you have to share, I guess, just from that time? Because this is what I really love. I was so disconnected from agriculture and my food until I was 28. I'm 30 now. And just hearing the stories, because I love history. And so even just one plot of land just has so much rich history. I mean, as you're mentioning that, it's just awesome. So I didn't know, yeah, if you had any stories that come to mind that to share.
Yeah, I kind of geeked out on it a little bit in the past year. And so on my dad's side of the family, they actually are kind of in that Beatrice, Nebraska area where the first homesteaders went out and have that first plot of land. And I can look back to our family history of them migrating out to Nebraska, taking one of those homestead plots. And they lived in a sod house for a number of years, but they were farmers. That's what they did. My dad always, we don't have, he doesn't have such a, I don't want to say good relationship. We've had good relationships, but they were so laser focused on making their farm work. My dad always said they didn't really have a lot of time to like hang out and talk to us, or as growing up. On my mom's side of the family, the homestead farmstead that we currently have, my great grandparents had bought that. So the house I grew up in, my great grandparents had lived in. So we have pictures of them, like pictures of them on the same porch that like my sister and I were babies on. And very much, the land around, you see them haying that land in black and white pictures, my grandpa as a little boy. And so when we were there, my sister and I always loved to go out into the woods because they still had all the farm equipment and the old time stuff that had been taken out. And I wished now, like I had no idea at the time how valuable that was. And we ended up like having a guy come and like sold it all for, pennies probably. And I think back now, I'm like, oh, I wish we would have kept all of those things. But it was very, it's odd the stories you remember. Like, I love coffee, but coffee was a big deal in the summer. Like, they'd be hanging, and my grandma would bring out hot coffee for the guys, and then as I was growing up, I just, my grandpa would be shearing sheep, and I just always remember jumping in the big, the big thing of wool and disappearing into that, and my great grandpa always telling my grandpa how he ought to do something. And it was interesting because my uncle decided to not go into farming. My grandpa's son, he left. And so that created a little bit of rub for a while. But then my dad came in to do that. And since I guess I'm the only of the four grandkids there are that are actively farming now.
Interesting. I guess before transitioning to what you're doing now, I'd be curious, what was one of your favorite things about growing up on a farm?
The freedom. I didn't realize it probably at the time, but it's interesting. I try to hold on to that for my boys in a world where that's not quite so normal. Like I would leave the house in the morning and just be gone. And we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have any way to communicate. I'd hop on my old horse and I'd go up to the river and back and I'd explore all over the place. And with no, like, I took a lunch with me. I was like, I'll see you later. And then there was a bell at night that my parents, would ring. I also think the other part, and I grew up with really traditional values, but I was always a valued equal. So while I was still, a girl, I was never ever anything less, whether it be my great grandpa, my grandpa's, my dad. It was never, oh, get in the kitchen or, something like that. I loved being in the kitchen, but I also love being outside. Like, I love making bread. I love cleaning, like, very much. I love that part. But I think that's probably the best, looking back now, the best memories I had was that I was just really encouraged to be, a woman that loved to farm, but that could really do anything. But to also value the qualities that a man could bring to the table and value that as well. And so today I was like, oh, I cannot relate to a lot of these things because I have never had to feel like I have been anything less than the best, you know, in me being a woman who likes to farm and all the things. So.
No, I love that. Because again, going back to whenever I first switched into agriculture and started learning more and more about it, I worked on a farm in Pennsylvania. And the feeling is just indescribable of waking up before the sun rises and then just being outside and all you hear is nature. I never experienced that ever. I grew up in a suburb middle America experience, but the true freedom, like you're saying, it's that's why I try to get folks as much as possible to start having relationships with local farms and ranches. And who knows, they might want to have you out and show you around, because I think that's such a huge missing piece in today's society, is we're so disconnected from our food, but we're so disconnected from the natural world. And so that's just great hearing that that's something you always were a part of. And I remember when I was on the farm, they had two youngins themselves, and just watching them just play out in the fields and wanting to help out on the farm. And yeah, it's just something I never have grown accustomed to seeing. And it's just awesome to see. So I guess now transitioning to what you're doing now, why Alaska, and what, I guess, what was that process like to where you're at now? Yeah, I'd be curious to hear that.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I did not come to Kodiak at all to farm whatsoever. And I really wanted the adventure of, you know, being away. And I thought that this was like, this will be great for a couple of years. And I absolutely don't, in saying all this, I definitely don't want to push my faith on anybody else. I'm a Christian. And so for me, I went up to, it was Kodiak Baptist Mission, a little Christian church camp where I was a summer camp counselor. And just fell in love with it and thought, oh, I think I should just move here and quit college, you know, but that was not the idea. So I was able to finish my college internship up here, and they have a super rich history. They began back in 1893, but were very much a farm. Like they had to live off the land. They didn't, you know, they had two boats a year that came through. So agriculture was an integral part of everything that they had done, but it all was dead. I mean, it looked like King Tut's tomb down at their barn. I mean, it was just, there was absolutely nothing. And I became the children's program administrator. So I organized, whether it be with state licensing or whatever, with childcare. And I was watching these kids come. And this was before I had my own. And I was like, we are just missing something. And I really felt like the best way to help develop quality character in kids was through agriculture and farming. And so we began to revitalize the farming program that was here. I flew in a couple of goats, which was so bizarre. And I thought, oh, here we go. Here goes my life. You know, because you know when you have agriculture growing up with it, I was like, I am now stuck all the time, you know, and milking animals was even, you know, more. So, and in Kodiak, we are very much a fishing community. Wild game hunting. So the farm life did not, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I have bears that I have to build a fence for. Like, this is odd, but okay. And so just trying to get the learning curve was really interesting. But food security is also, you know, it takes us 3 days before the shelves are empty on this island. You know, when the boats don't come or the planes don't fly, which has nothing to do with the I mean, the system. It has everything to do with our weather's crap. You know, it's hard to just get a boat in the winter. So we've always had transportation issues and supply chain issues just being where we are. And so I was looking for you know, that obviously began to grow into what is a more stable food source. And that came with goats. And then I decided to start a dairy, which was probably hindsight, was a lot of work I wasn't anticipating to have, but now I'm really love it. We do everything. So we are the small farm. We have the pigs, we have the horses, we have the chickens, the ducks, the cows, the goats, sheep. I have a dairy cow that's getting ready to have a, you know, like it's we're we are now doing it all. And it's not only for sustainability, it's also for the education factor. So I've bought the farm since then, and still are doing, kids camps and youth internship programs and things like that.
So there's a lot of great stuff that you just said before going to the educational piece, which is awesome. So you flew in goats. What made you want to, I guess, just decide with goats? And then how did you decide the type of goats to essentially fly in?
So when my mom was diagnosed with MS, my sister also had Crohn's disease. And so they were looking for, first of all, something that my sis milk my sister could drink, which goat milk was ideal. It has a different protein makeup, which makes it more digestible. And so it was also really great for my mom. So I'm a huge advocate for goat milk. And they have a light footprint. They are definitely not, a cow. If you, especially in the homesteading world, I think goats are so valuable. The difference here with a goat, you can have five goats that are going to have, their babies. Well, that's more than likely 10 babies. And if something goes wrong with one, you still have four more that are going to have babies, whereas if one thing goes wrong with your large milk cow, you're sunk. And so that goat, and then you can have more goats. You can spread out, you can have a goat in milk, you can have not a goat in milk. Gosh, you start getting more and more cows. That gets really, complicated. For us here, especially on an island, goat milk being a universal milk, it feeds infants and toddlers. And that's definitely not something that, the modern world wants you to know, but like goat milk has been in replace of formula for many years. And people can do whatever they want. I'm absolutely for food freedom, be free. But I would also want to feed my child. And so if there was a point when you didn't have any formula, well, goat milk absolutely can take the place of that. I went for miniature Nubians when I flew them in originally and quickly transferred to the large goats because I didn't want to break my back anymore. And so I thought maybe, some Alpines for a while. They were just too mean for me. They are so territorial. They drove me crazy. So I settled really with Nubians. So the long-eared Nubians, they have a great butterfat quality of milk, and then Saanens. And so I end up with kind of a mix of a Snoobian is what we call them. So it has the heftiness of the Nubian, the milk quality of a Saanen, and they are just the best. I recently just added a little La Mancha. I never thought I would do that. They don't have ears, but they are like go-getter goats. And so here, where we don't have a vet, I need a goat that like comes out fighting. And these little La Manchas are hopefully going to add a little bit of the like really desire to live at the beginning. It's not that we lose goats, but I have to work at some of them sometimes. And so these little La Manchas are tough guys. So it's really been developed through the environment I am. I am not so worried about a registered goat. That really doesn't matter to me. I want the strong, sturdy goat that's going to make it.
So you bring up a great point about the goat milk, but also with infants and children. Because I forgot, I remember seeing this on Twitter, and they brought up a great point that in America, they convinced a whole generation to stop feeding their children breast milk for formula, and we didn't think twice about that. And now, as I learn more and more about raw dairy and the history of it all, the more I realize how we've been misled on that. If you could just, for the listeners, because it's interesting with folks that start drinking raw milk, even having that first glass, there's so much hesitation just because we've just had it instilled in us that it will make us sick and kill us. So it's like we're drinking poison, but it's the complete inverse. It's a superfood. So for the listeners that might have a little, I guess, pushback, especially in the context of infants and children, could you just help educate them on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think more than anything, and I'm going to digress, and then I'll circle around just a little bit. With our modern food, the nutritional denseness of it has gotten so lacking, and so we put that into our bodies for so long. And so then say somebody, who has had a very refined, pasteurized diet comes in, and oh my gosh, I've discovered the way, and I'm going to go all natural and awful. That's going to hurt a little bit. Just regaining your microbiome and your gut takes a little bit of time. So I can see where, you know, certain people would say, oh, that made me not feel great. That's because your gut's working again. That's because your insides that haven't worked, all the processedness that you've gotten used to, now all of a sudden you're, you know, so it's almost a bit of a detox to get to where you need to be. And sometimes too, you know, we are in concrete jungles here with our kids and we're so concerned, you know, it's like, let's bring out the hand sanitizer. Let's wash our hands 18 times a day. Well, you're missing out on good germs too. And yet again, then your kid just doesn't have a very strong immune system built up, you know, where I'm like, feed the kid the dirt, like let them go in and play with them and do, like get them out into their environment. So anything natural is going to potentially create some initial issues in my experience. And I really, you know, it's interesting. I grew up on raw milk. It was just never a thought that it wasn't okay. And so when I originally hit the grade A certified dairy, Alaska, raw milk was illegal. And the only way I could get milk into the hands of people was to be a grade A dairy. If I wanted to get it into many hands. And it's so interesting. You do. And I just read a statistic. It was like 97% of scientists agree with whatever, with whoever is paying them, you know, that it doesn't matter that it's just whoever's behind the research and paying for that research is the results you will get. And that's where I really come back to, it has to be a personal decision. You have to look at your farmers. I'd absolutely be a little worried about drinking raw milk from a 10,000 cow dairy. I'm just a little bit, I went by one of those not that long ago and I was like, oh, this is way different. Your farmer down the road that you're drinking the same milk they're drinking, no, I would not be concerned whatsoever. And it really comes back to, you know, too, these small farmers have such pride in what they are doing. And they have the utmost respect too for their animals and the purpose for those animals. And you are just getting such a fantastic quality product. So I can understand the reluctance of it. If you've had a really reformed diet, if you've had, you know, if you have been all packaged plastic and you're going to jump over to this, yeah, you're going to have some growing pains a little bit. I think at the end of the day though, the benefits far outweigh. You know, I've watched my mom, she's in year 40 of MS. My sister doesn't have any Crohn's disease problems whatsoever. Doesn't have any problem digesting any of my milk. Go to the store, she can't do it. Messes her up. There's something to that, you know? So anyway, that's, I definitely respect people's decision, but gosh, I want the freedom to be able to make our own decisions.
Exactly. That last point is so crucial. That's why I'm trying to educate on raw milk. We should have the ability to choose. The fact that we can't, I mean, fortunately today I saw West Virginia, they, passed a bill to help with the sales of raw milk. So that's great. But the fact that there's so many states to where it's still completely illegal, not even going through herd shares or any other hoops that you have to, I don't know, it's just really ridiculous. And you bring up also a great point that there is a transition period, but I also find it interesting with whenever that instance happens, because we don't think twice about saying eating a pizza or junk food and just feeling like garbage after, and you have to sit on your butt for an hour just to let the garbage process. That's just become so normalized now. I know, I just always find that really, really interesting. And then you also bring up,
oh, right. Oh. We've gotten used to feeling horrible. It's really unfortunate.
That's why even for like a bag of Skittles, for example, I remember I would eat that and obviously it tastes great, but my stomach would just feel horrible. And then I looked at the ingredients about a month ago and it makes sense. There's all these dyes that are derived from petroleum, all these other nasty, unnatural ingredients. Yeah. And then here you have like wild blueberries that it's a complete inverse. It's actually healing you within. And yeah, it's just all backwards right now. But you also brought up a really great point with the 10,000 dairy with pasteurization too. I mean, a lot of these farms, they don't even really care about the conditions because they're just going to pasteurize it in the first place. And folks don't really think about that at all. compared to a raw dairy farmer that takes extremely good care of the environment because they have to, because it's their business. That's what I also find hilarious with this conversation is why would a farmer take massive risks, put all of their finances into starting a dairy just to sell milk that makes people sick? That just does not make logical sense, and that's never talked about either. So I'll just leave it at that.
And I will say, growing up in a farming family and you see large scale farmers, I really don't think anybody wants to make people sick, but there are three reasons why people do things. One, I mean, why they don't do things. One, they don't have any money, and the other two don't matter. Money drives everything, and that's the unfortunate part of this. I think that we lose sight of the quality in pursuit of money. And there's not a lot of money in farming, and I want so badly to say to more and more people, if you have the means to, if you have the ability to, don't go to the back of the grocery store and buy a big gallon of milk. Go down the road and find a farmer and support them. Because if you can divert that, if you can divert the funds where they're going right now, there are so many passive consumers that we forget that if we can just divert, or if you have the ability to buy milk for yourself and your neighbor down the road, because you know they can't, well, do that. And that's what's going to help drive these smaller farmers to regain back a lot of what I believe was just the sweetest part about America are these small family farms making it, supporting their communities to take that power away from these large scale. And again, they're there for a purpose, but we have to be the legs to create the change. We can't just expect it to happen when the money keeps being driven there, but people can really vote with their dollar.
I harp on that a lot because I truly believe nothing will change unless we vote with our dollar. And I think that's a good segue into the educational piece because you have these camps and small internships. I would just love to hear the impetus behind starting all of that because educational is such a critical component of agriculture to try to get more people invested into it all, but also just to see if with folks kind of such as yourself that realize that's something that they want to do long term.
Right. Well, like you said, you 2 years ago, you ended up going to a farm. You didn't have the background to do it, but gosh, you were there and you had a good, you felt it and you knew it. That's exactly what I want to help create. I'd like to help do it earlier for kids, so that they can grow up saying, oh, I had this incredible experience at a farm and I want to find a farmer, as they start to launch. Or I can do this. It's not so overwhelming that I can't have a couple of chickens, have a dairy goat. This is actually possible. And we've done kids camp for a long time, and really, COVID was actually kind of fantastic in my world, just because kids couldn't do anything, right? And I was like, hey, I'm gonna start a farm. After school club, we will be outside. Like, we don't need to wear masks. I will not let them go inside. Like, put on your coveralls. And it was the sweetest, most fantastic year for me and this group of kids because we just had all this, and they weren't doing anything else. I didn't have to compete against any other sports or activities. I had these fantastic group of like, I mean, it was a crew of us. We probably had more than we should have, but. That's what grew this incredible community. And then it's just really grown from there. And I don't think any year will be quite so good because, all the things have come back. And so all the competition that kids have to, go and do these other things. But I still have this core group of kids and they've grown into this great little internship crew. And so they help do the work of the farm, and we have new ones that will come in, not at such a large rate, but, they have to apply and they have to, really be interested in actually working. Because I'm nice, but I'm not that nice when it comes to the farm. Like they know, they're like, Miss Kelly's scary. And so they work. And if you want to come to camp and get all the good feels and all the, hugs, like, yep, we have farm camp for kids too to help provide those experiences. But I truly, if you want something to be valued, you have to really know about it and learn about it. And so I can't do it for everybody. I can do it for my little piece of the world, and I would love to help, hopefully, inspire other people to do it in their little pieces of the world too.
Love that. And then also just with your boys too, and raising them on the farm, I guess what are some core values that you want to help instill in them and the environment that they're raised in?
Yeah, a big one for me right now is toughness and mental toughness. Like you can have feelings, but you need to hold on to those for a little bit and get your job done. Like there is a and I want to, I don't want to, I guess it's just my life. I probably offend people, but like we have to grow strong kids that have mental toughness. And I know that mental health is a thing, but a lot of those things can be handled through actual hard work and feeling good about accomplishing something. And so I put my boys in uncomfortable situations frequently. There are things that they do that are absolutely, they can make money. If they're doing the dairy and it's something that is part of like earning money, I'm gonna pay them. But there are farm chores part of being in life. Like there's the middle of the night, get your butt up. We're gonna go outside and we have to do this and toughen up. I know it's cold, but we're okay. You know, and so there's that whole side. And then really I guess it's just shoving them out and telling them to launch. And then as a parent, having the courage to not overstep, because we grew up in the whole era of like, oh my gosh, I gotta like put a bubble around my kids. No, you don't. Like every time I think with my boys when they like do something dangerous, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're gonna break an arm. Like they're gonna die. But if I say that and then they succeed in doing it, I have become a liar. I just told them, you're gonna get hurt. And then they're like, psh, I didn't get hurt. So I quit saying it. I'm like, have you thought through that? And they're like, we're good. You know, as they're like on the top of the barn, you know, and I was like, there are certain things we don't live from, but you know, if you're good. And my boys have never broken a bone, you know, knock on wood or whatever. They've never broken a bone. They've never been to the ER. And they do lots. I mean, they've gotten some major cuts with Steri strips on them, you know, but they're out here shooting flintlocks and cutting axe, you know, with axes and bow and arrows and sleeping outside and like wrangling animals a lot. And Grayson's 14 and weighs 70 pounds. Like he's not big, but he can do big things. And that kid has confidence like no other, which I'm super thankful for being a 70-pound 14-year-old, because he's gonna need that confidence. So I guess it's the courage to step outside the box and to really work towards growing mentally tough kids.
I love that, because just from my, I don't know, my whole life, I had a very, I would say, straightforward and relatively easy life, but it wasn't until life really essentially slapped me in the face, and I mean, why I started Regenesance and everything that I've done is because of everything I've gone through the last 3 years of losing my brother and then mother, but I think that's why I think about the farm a lot. Because you're not just a farmer, you are essentially the jack of all trades because you have to be. And then, like you said, it doesn't matter if it's snowing or if it's dark out and late, you got to do what you got to do. And that's something that's not, I was not really taught, and I don't fault my parents for that at all. That's just kind of the environment I was raised in. And again, going back to the farm I worked on in Pennsylvania and seeing those kids and how they viewed life, but then also just the viewed just being on a farm, and pairing that with what you're saying, it's just so awesome, because that's why I try to educate as much too, is most kids don't get that, and then who knows, they might have never gone, they've gone their whole life with ever without ever going on a farm or a ranch, and that's just kind of a sad thought to think about, that like you said, years and years ago or generations ago, there's just small homesteads and farms throughout the country. And so, yeah, that's just awesome. That's all I really had to say for that. So I guess to transition a little bit to, because you've also mentioned that you have pigs and chickens and cows. whenever, I guess, how did you know the next step to add pigs? And then again, saying you wanted chickens, what was the thinking behind all of that?
Yeah, that was a big step because while my one grandpa had hogs, my dad never had hogs, and he refused to have chickens because he was scared of roosters. And so when I was looking at our farm setup and being kind of disconnected in that small farm life, I realized, oh my, I have a lot of milk. Pigs are a really great use of milk. And I also wanted to really know where my meat was coming from. I had always just known. I mean, we always raised our own beef and it tasted great. And then you go to the store and you're like, this is not good. And so I wanted to have that side as well. So, the pigs come in and they're just so good at helping take care of that milk. And they've also been really excellent with our ground around here. They're the best little cultivators and then it produces fantastic grass for us. The chickens, I mean, their chickens are like the amazing. I don't know how else to put, like they are have a couple of chickens. Like they poop out food every day and they're generally pretty simple to take care of and they eat your scraps. I mean, pigs really eat your scraps, but the chickens will eat your scraps too. I mean, they are just I'm always a little intimidated by chickens, but they are just the best. Sorry, I got my kiddo back here. Anyway, but they are so he's trying to be like stealth mode Landry out here. And they're going out. All right. Sorry. Everybody's going to school.
That's
Anyway,
fine.
Chickens, and then so like the ducks, there was no really good reason except that they were really beautiful. Like I just loved watching the ducks and they made me feel great. But then the duck eggs are good too. So every little thing, like, and we got Maggie the cow. I'm all into goat milk, but I really love cream and I love butter, and those are two huge things that disappear first from the grocery store. So bringing in Maggie, and she's an A2A2 Jersey cow, so her milk works for the goats. So if I need goat milk, it's a really neat little marriage. So the idea is each step was what can each animal do to help, another. Rabbits aren't my favorite. We have rabbits. However, they're the fastest protein turnaround source. So when I'm teaching kids, I want to teach a kid how to raise a rabbit, have a male and a female. So if you ever end up in a survival situation, you're set with protein, and then I have my top three, the rabbit, the chicken, the goat. If I can teach him how to do that, I believe you can live. And so but half of it's education, half of it's okay. So how can everything help each other here, and make the best use, for what I have and not, break the bank kind of thing. So.
With chickens, that was something I found very surprising myself. I didn't realize that. So we had a couple of chicken tractors that at night, most of them would, I mean, pretty much all of them would put themselves in the chicken tractor. So I didn't even have to do anything to corral them at night. I don't know. That was just something I genuinely did not
They're
expect.
amazing.
Yeah.
They're just the best.
Except whenever they peck your feet.
We have a really aggressive rooster, but he's a banty, so he's more funny. But when you're not expecting him, I'm like, Marty, like, what is your problem? Like, I feed you, buddy, but he also brings a lot of joy too, so it's worth it, I guess.
That's funny. With so you're mentioning that you teach the kids about the rabbits with the male and female. Yeah, I'd be curious, what all do you teach them as they're so for example, during the pandemic and you had them for that year, what all would you be teaching them?
We do a lot of different things. So I have a lot of the animal care. I think a really big component that I teach is work, the actual time invested work. Like grab a pitchfork. We are going to scoop manure. Oh, you're tired. Okay, finish your job. You have other things that are expecting you, like we take care of these guys because they need us to live, thinking beyond yourself. So that's a huge one, because really it comes to community and helping friends out. We've gotten to be so good at like, we're just going to go and we don't have to worry about anybody else. Well, you do, you have a community around you. And if you have the means to help them, help them. So really it's hard work. It's the hard work. It's the time spent. But then I also really work hard to help them recognize, doesn't that feel great? Doesn't this food taste good? Doesn't it feel nice to see your animals feeling good? Now that makes you feel good too. But then it's really the small parts of just the animal husbandry. It's that small farm mentality. Treat your animals well. This is a direct reflection of you as a person, your livestock, the way that you're keeping these animals, and that there in turn will affect the quality of the product. So we're going to stand at that farmer's market and we're going to sell those products. Do you feel good about that? Would you eat this? You know, is this something, you know, so it's all the whole idea of you put in the work, you feel good about the product, and then you want to really share it with other people and you feel good about it. You know, you're not like, oh, I hope that they don't have a problem today. Make sure you send that milk to 210 and, you know, temperature wise to kill anything that might've happened. Well, no. And that's really what it comes down to. And I think a component that you kind of, it was an unintended teaching opportunity, but I watched these kids leave and just their self-confidence that they have gotten from working and doing something and taking pride, really having something real to take pride in, has been neat. You know, watching their self-confidence grow, I've really appreciated.
That's just everything that you're saying. It's just deja vu for me, because everything that you described with the goals you have for them is essentially what I experienced whenever I worked on the farm. And then having that food, I mean, my 100% of my diet was from the farm. And like you said, it was nothing like I've had in grocery stores my whole life. That's yet another reason why I have this, is people aren't aware of the food that they're eating is so different than the food that you get from your local farm or ranch. It's night and day difference, but also it's more nutrient dense and you do feel better eating that food. I previously had on last week, he's a farmer out in California, and he mentioned he has pigs that one of his customers mentioned they couldn't eat pork for the longest time from the grocery store. It always made them sick, but then they had his mm-hmm. and they're completely fine now and they can eat all of that. And there's just so many examples of that to where folks just don't realize that, because we've just, again, been so disconnected from all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last part I wanted to talk about was specifically with Alaska and the weather. Because I live in Austin, Texas, and that's vastly different than where you're at. If you could just, help explain or help contextualize what it's like to farm and the weather that's Alaska.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. No, this morning it feels like 5 degrees outside, which is actually not normal for Kodiak. We are a temperate rainforest down here. We're kind of the tropics of Alaska. So like in February, it'll rain 27 out of the 28 days. Wow. You know, or we don't see the sun for, you know, it'll go, I guess probably 28 days was, I think, the longest. I don't know, like we'll go a really long time without a big old sunball up there. And so it's, you know, having things undercover is just always so important. Your setup is really important. It can be challenging. I was just up in Fairbanks for some meetings, and there are some farmers up north in Delta Junction, and we had a really cold spell this winter where it was negative 60, and some of their feet froze to the ground, and they lost, you know, a bunch of their cattle. I mean, you just can't work with negative 60. And I'm sitting there like, what are you doing? Like, this is our, but you know, it'll turn around in the summer and it's just 100 degrees in that same spot, you know, so they just have such extreme changes. Alaska, it's always challenging, but I guess, you know, like we also have the unlimited days of sun in the summer, which provide us such unique opportunities. You know, with our cold kind of glacier soil, we grow really sweet, fantastic root vegetables that's unique to us. But Alaska is behind. We're trying to catch up. The neat part about Alaskans, by and large, we do not have large corporate farms. We are all about small farmers, and there's a great contingency of small farmers that want to keep it that way. And so they are so motivated in really, really adverse conditions, you know. So the weather and the weather, I guess, more than anything for me, it's like, oh, this is another cold, you know, day, or another wet day that we're trying to figure out. So it's really helped my arm muscles in mucking a lot of mucking. So that's Alaska weather. You just have to kind of be tough and really crazy, I guess, to do it.
You said that Alaska is catching up. What do you mean by that?
We are trying to be more food secure. You know, the pandemic kind of woke up a lot of folks as to our supply chain is really delicate anyway. And then here, you know, being already a disconnected state, there's a push to grow more agriculture. I think that Alaska is one of three states that actually grew in number of farms this past year. So you see more people trying to grow more food. We also actually the governor of Alaska went 2 years trying to discontinue the entire dairy program to this past year. He actually legalized the sale of raw milk. And so like our dairy is switching this year. We're moving away from what it was. We're going to this, but it has opened up the door to be able to provide local accessible food. You know, there is another bill that's being looked at to help open up the doors for cottage food. And so there's just enough of the last frontierness still here that not everybody's drank the Kool-Aid, you know, and there's still really a push to keep agriculture local. It's interesting, you know, every once in a while you'll hear the governor talk about exports. They're like, we got to start exporting something. And then there's a very quick return with the farmers like, no, we don't. Like, we're fine. Let's keep it here. Like, feed our people, you know, and I like that. I like that side of it.
You mentioned about the bill with the cottage food. Can you explain what that means?
So cottage foods are like canned foods. Right now, the bill on the table is they'd like to expand that. So right now there's a $10,000 gap. So you can only make $10,000 before you have to go underneath commercial regulations and additional checks, balances, regulations. I think that Rauscher, which is one of the senators, he has it to like $250,000, which is pretty much like an unlimited cap that he's going for. It'll be interesting to see, you know, because you still have, you know, it's kind of the back and forth of like, that's a big jump. But really the idea is they are working towards additional freedoms within their food systems here. So they're, and again, the governor, he went for it. He's like, we're going to make this raw milk thing available, do it, you know, and it went through. I mean, like, it's through. I was calling up to double check with the Department of Environmental Conservation. I was like, okay, so I'm going to do this and this. And they're like, no, you can't do that. Like, that's actually not part of it. It was something with ice cream. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to send you some pictures. And I put the law that they had enacted and I circled all the spots. And they're like, we're going to have to check. And then they came back to you. They're like, you are right. And I talked to the state vet. We're good friends. And she's like, yeah, they called me. And I told them, I told you about this when we were getting ready to put this law in. Y'all just passed it through. And they're like, you didn't think somebody was going to like figure it out. And they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that we did this. And I was like, yep, you did it. And I'm going to follow the law and have some freedom. And I think that's the other part, you know, too. Joel Salatin says this, you know, like he's always like, not so many words, but like, tell me the law and I will figure out a way to make it work. You know, I'm not going to break the law, but like, At the same time, I'm going to take my liberties and my freedoms where they lie, and I'm going to do what's legal. And so I think that that's the, like, just tell me the rules and I'll figure out a way to make it work. And sometimes people are like, just fall in line. I was like, absolutely not. I will not. Like, it's not what we are founded on. We are forward, good thinkers. So that's, there are ways around laws. There are ways to make food free, but you have to have the motivation to do it, and the energy to do it, the stamina to like get it done, but it's worth it.
I love that. So with you were saying with the raw milk and more farms are propping up. And I know you've mentioned you grew up on a small farm and you have a small farm yourself. How do you, in terms of, I guess, strategy, continue to add to your farm but don't want to get I guess too big or overworked with all of that? How do you find that balance?
And I hit a point on that where it was almost too much, because I'm pretty much by myself. And I think what I realized was this is how much I can do. I don't have to do it all. But hopefully I can help motivate, encourage other people to pull their weight. That I'm not going to be the savior of all the things, but I can do what I can do. And the day when I am so busy that my family's going to eat a frozen pizza that I put in in the oven, because I'm over here trying to produce really good food, like that's a problem, and that's too big. And that's when you say I take a step back. We're like, oh my gosh, let's go buy eggs because these eggs are, I'm going to go sell these. Oh, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. So I think it's continually just self-evaluating again and again. And I think with any farmer, they want to do more and they want to do more, but we're not supposed to do more. People are supposed to step up around us and do their part too. And that's more of where I've come. Like, it's not my job to pull your weight too. It's my job to pull my weight, and I might be able to pull a little bit more because I have a few more muscles right now. But like, get in the gym and start pulling your weight. Like, start doing something. And I always tell people too, okay, so you have the finances to have a backyard chicken coop. You don't want to deal with that. I bet the little boy down the street would love to. Give that kid $500, help him get a coop, pay him $25 for a bag of feed every week, and then you get free eggs from him. Like, provide the opportunity for somebody else to help provide food for you, because somebody wants to do it, they just don't have the means to. So if you have the means to, and you really don't believe you have the time to, because you're too busy working, making all your money, use some of that money so that somebody else can help provide you food. So
I freaking love
my
that.
minor soapbox on that.
No, that's awesome. I've never thought about that at all. And I mean, that's so true with just being creative about it and just taking the initiative like that, I think could really work. Yeah, no, I'm thinking just because I have a couple neighbors that have their own chickens themselves. And I mean, I'm just in North Austin. I was pretty shocked, to be honest, to see that. So it'd be awesome to see that more and more.
Yeah. Lots of little coops all around.
That and gardens, I wish that's one thing that with going back to World War II with all the victory gardens, how literally 40% of our vegetable production was from just small gardens and family households. It would be awesome to just walk around neighborhoods and see people's creative gardens about all of that instead of just yards have been sprayed with all kinds of garbage.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, thank you
Absolutely.
for joining me, Kelly. I really
Yeah.
appreciated this. And I guess if there's anything you would like to share for the listeners to where they could find you.
Instagram is the main place for me. It's at Kodiak Goat Dairy. If you want some fun kid inspiration for kids taking a few steps back, my boys have a little YouTube channel. It's the late 1800s life. If you follow them, that make me so happy because I'm so against all of the crazy YouTubeness. And I was like, yes, you can start a YouTube channel from the 1800s, and we will pour lead balls for flintlocks and pretend that we're at the Alamo. And so that's really like, do me a solid, help this mom out. Go help these boys, like, be like, oh, this is okay. But yeah, Instagram at Kodiak Goat Dairy is the main place though.
Perfect. Well, I highly suggest the listeners to go check all of that out. I've been following her Instagram for a while, and she posts a lot of awesome videos. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
we have
thank you
fun.
again.
Thank you.
You can find the full video on YouTube at The Renaissance.